Talk Central is brought to you by BlackBerry.
Hi, this is Diplo. I'm just out there mixing ideas and mixing up different genres. I can't believe that people are actually paying me to travel across the world and build new sounds, different artists. The BlackBerry Torch makes it simple because I'm always staying in touch with everybody, whether it's using Twitter applications or Facebook. A lot of these guys, I have a closer relationship now because I'm constantly on BBM talking to them.
Pop.
I love what I do. And a BlackBerry Torch helps me do it.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. It feels like a Friday afternoon, Candice, but it's actually a Thursday and ahead of what is probably going to be a very long weekend for most people.
Indeed it is. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, we're working on Tuesday next week, but I think most of the country is going to be on leave on Tuesday as well to take advantage of the fact that Wednesday is Freedom Day and have an extra long weekend.
Indeed.
We probably should have done the same because you know how quiet it's going to be next Tuesday.
At least we'll have some company.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's there are some stories we need to catch up on and some admin to do. So we'll be here if you're in the office or you can get us on your phone if you're sitting on the beach. We've got a new mobile site, so check that out. You're never far from technology news these days with all the latest gadgets and tools. While you're riding the waves at Jeffrey's Bay, you can... surf the internet and check out Tech Central. Right, I'm not sure where that's going, so let's get right into the show this week. I guess the really interesting news this week was the announcement about Jeffrey Hedberg leaving Telkom. Well, we know he's leaving Telkom, but joining the Eltech Group as Group Chief Operating Officer, reporting into Craig Fenter. What did you make of that appointment, Candice?
I think it's an incredible appointment. I think that Jeffrey is definitely the kind of guy you want in your business at the moment. He's well sought after, exceptionally experienced, and definitely the market took well to the news. And Eltech is up again this morning, 3.5%.
Oh, is it? It was up 10% yesterday.
Yesterday, it just climbed, shot through the roof. People are very happy with the appointment.
So, yeah, one wonders to what extent that is the results and the sort of forecast of the company that Craig Fenter put forward to the analysts yesterday, and to what extent it's Jeffrey Hedberg's appointment to the group.
Well, the earnings that Eltech produced yesterday were not anything spectacular.
No, they were pretty disappointing, but the outlook, their forecast for growth was pretty strong. So
specifically with convergence, yes, but I think it's a combination, to be honest. I think Eltech has a lot of potential, and I think that Jeffrey, as COO, is the kind of person who can release that potential from the company.
Yeah, he's certainly got a lot of experience running telecommunications companies, and I'm sure his expertise will be brought to bear in the East African market, where, especially in Kenya, where Eltech really fell off the bus over the last year. It was their most promising growth market. They were talking about it being the growth engine for Eltech, and the performance from the Kenyan, or the whole East African subsidiary has been very, very poor. The profits plummeted there, margins squeezed, Craig Fenter was blaming the massively increased competition up there, but I think it was more a case of their management team taking the eye off the ball.
Well, I think that they were hit with a sort of a little bit of a boom in competition in the East African market, and from being the only provider of infrastructure to being one of four or five providers of infrastructure, it's not easy, specifically in a year. I mean, it hasn't been a long time since Eltech was alone in that business. So I don't think it's fair to say that it's entirely up to management, but I think a combination of management taking the eye off the ball and massive competition driving prices down in the country has sort of given them a rough year. And I think Jeffrey could really give some insight, having been across the African market and looked at other companies, Multilinks being one of them, although wasn't managed to save, didn't manage to save that one. But
well, they did manage to sell it off, but at a massive loss to the purchase price.
Absolutely, but I think that Jeffrey is a good person to be in that space now, and yes, I think there's a lot of potential for the company to do well, even in East Africa. I mean, it's a good market. It is a promising market.
Mm. Yeah, Jana Maria from Business Times actually asked her an interesting question at the press conference ahead of the analyst presentation. And she asked, you've got two big egos here, Jeffrey Hedberg and Craig Fenter. One wonders how well they're going to work together over time. I've heard stories about ego clashes within the Altec group, and we've certainly seen quite a lot of top-level managers leave there in the last year. I wonder how these two men, who are both very ambitious, are going to manage that relationship. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Well, I think that's going to be key to the success of Jeffrey's position at Altec, and I would sort of venture to say Altec itself. But I also feel it's almost like a demotion for Jeffrey Hedberg to go from the CEO of Telkom Group, or I suppose acting CEO of Telkom Group, to the CEO of Altec.
Yeah. One wonders if there were some promises made there. I mean, I've asked both of them, you know, has Jeffrey been promised the CEO job at some point down the line? And, you know, the answer was, I mean, Craig Fenter said to me very specifically, he's no intention of leaving Altec. Jeffrey Hedberg said he's very happy to be back in an operational role. Now, that's obviously he's, as you said, pointed out the other day, Candace, he's been media trained. He knows how to what to say in these sort of situations. But I can't help wondering whether there's been some sort of promise here, and perhaps we'll see. Perhaps this is just guesswork, but perhaps we'll see Craig Fenter moving into the parent Altron stable at some point.
Well, there are rumors that Robbie Fenter, who's now running Altron, is thinking of leaving the country.
There's been that for a long time. His family lives in the UK. I remember last year the Business Times, I think, again, wrote a story suggesting that he was keen to go and move to the UK.
And Craig,
he denied it at the time, and there's no specific indication from Robbie that he wants to go. It's just rumour in the market.
Yeah. But Craig could take over that position.
Craig could take over as CEO of Altron if Robbie were to go, but these are all ifs, and we must emphasise that this is all just
this
speculation.
This is just speculation, yes.
But if there is a plan like that, then Jeffrey Hedberg may have been informed about it. Possibly. We don't know. We don't know. But
perhaps he is just happy to be in a COO role. I mean, operations is a lot of work. It's, you know, as much work as a CEO position,
yeah.
if not more.
Yeah.
And perhaps he just wants to get his hands dirty again and get in work on the operational side, you know.
Yeah.
So and he would make an excellent operations head in Altec, you know, pulling together all the pieces, specifically in terms of convergence. I mean, they've got technology concepts, they've got Autopage Cellular, they've got all the pieces to build something fantastic. They just need someone now who can focus that and put it together. And maybe that's exactly what Jeffrey wants to do.
It's great news, I think, that he's staying in the country. He's, of course, an American national who's run a number of international telecommunications businesses, and he really likes it here. I mean, I've chatted to him on a number of occasions, and he's a big fan of the country and wanted to stay here. So I think it's good for the country that someone of his level of and degree of expertise chose to stay here instead of taking up a job at an operator or some other company in Europe or the US.
It is nice to especially that kind of skill level, to keep that in the country and hopefully transfer that skill level to other locals. So I think it's really nice to keep him here.
Yeah, but Altec's going to be one to watch. I mean, they've been through a rough patch in the last year. They're talking about turning that around this year, getting their operating profit margins back above 10%. They were 8.2% for the 2011 financial year. Let's see what Jeffrey and Craig can come up with together. They're talking about doing big acquisitions. I must mention that they're apparently talking to one or two, in Craig's words, potential buys, significant buys, he said. And they're keen to expand internationally and become a global player in telecommunications, technology, and media. So I don't know. He wouldn't say which countries he's looking at or which companies he is talking to, but he was suggesting that something may be imminent in that regard.
Well, definitely one to watch then.
For sure. Now, of course, Jeffrey Hedberg isn't the only senior executive moving around in the telecommunications industry. I had the opportunity to have lunch with a couple of other journalists last week with the new CEO of Neotel, Sunil Joshi. Very nice guy. Sat next to him at the lunch. Indian national, I think, although he had a distinctly American accent. Quite a different sort of approach. I got the impression to his predecessor, Ajay Pandey, who is moving on, going back to India to work for the Tata Communications CEO. Tata Communications, of course, owns 56% of Neotel. He seems to be a lot more dynamic, is probably the right word. He said the company is going to be a lot more open about its plans and what it's doing. And he was talking about becoming more aggressive in the consumer market, where clearly they have blown hot and cold in the last year in terms of what their strategy is in that space. He's talking about growing their consumer base by 50% this year, which is solid growth, although it's coming off a small base of only 50,000. They're talking about expanding and deepening their CDMA coverage and their WiMAX coverage. And I see they're getting a little more aggressive with their advertising campaigns as well. So it's still early days, but you know, just talking to Neotel executives, they seem quite upbeat about him and what the potential for the company is under his leadership.
Well, I mean, I feel for Ajay Pandey because he came into a market where there was no competition, where Neotel was supposed to be the competition, and they were promised a level of protection which they'd never really received because of the court judgment that allowed 300 plus companies access to ECNS licenses, which allows them to build their own, you know, telecoms networks and compete directly with the big guys like Telkom, Neotel and the others. So, you know, there was a certain amount of protection guaranteed to Neotel that it never received, and it invested a lot of money to get to where it was going. And I think the company sort of lost sight of its strategy and how to deal with a very dynamic market. And I think you need someone hyperactive, someone who doesn't sleep, someone who's you know, up at 5 a.m. and ready to go and only leaves the office at 2 in the morning, literally to keep pace with what's going on in the market now. And it's really getting exciting now in telecom competition in the country. So good to hear that they've got a new dynamic person in the leadership, and best of luck to AJ at Tata. And you know, it's good to see the changes, though. It's needed, I think.
I liked AJ. I think I was the first person to interview him when he got off the plane from India all those years ago, about 5-6 years ago now. I think I remember interviewing him in the reception at a Rosebank hotel where he was living, where he was getting ready to live for a while, surrounded by all his luggage, chatting to him then. His English proficiency has improved dramatically since then, but a nice guy, and you know, he was very, very professional, and you know, there was nothing arrogant about him.
No, but he was quite reserved, and I think that that also fed through into the company culture. I mean, they traded very carefully wherever they went.
That's true. Some people would say they were too cautious.
And I think that might have been, that would have been a great approach if they had the protection that they were guaranteed. But unfortunately, that, you know...
No, fortunately, because...
Well, fortunately. Yes. Unfortunately for them, fortunately for us, that changed. And, yes, and now they do need someone more aggressive. Yes. And someone more with you know, a lot more dynamism to take them through the next couple of years. Besides that, fresh blood is never a bad thing for a top business like Neotel. Mm.
One interesting thing was a question I actually asked of the new Neotel leadership was this fact that they're the only telecommunications operator sitting with spectrum in the 800 megahertz band, the only ones with this access to the so-called digital dividend spectrum at the moment. And I asked them whether they felt that was something that would gave them a strategic advantage. And Vinod Kumar, who was the CEO of Tata Communications based in India, who's also out for this lunch and to introduce you know, the executives to the staff, he said that they've appointed an internal team at Neotel to investigate what they might be able to do with the spectrum.
Well, I'm busy doing an investigative piece around what it could be doing in that space, so hang in there.
Cool.
Have something interesting on it too.
Excellent. Staying with telecoms, the spat between Vodacom and Cell C is continuing. I see we weren't down in Port Elizabeth, but I see that Lars Reichelt, the CEO, made some interesting remarks at a dinner where he said things along the lines of something along the lines of he resents being called a liar. Pointedly, I suspect sent it in the direction of Peter Ace at Vodacom. But it's getting pretty tense out there, and I think the emotions are starting to bubble to the surface a little bit. But you know, Vodacom launched their 42 or 43, they call it 43 megabit per second mobile broadband network.
ASA, here we come.
on Saturday, and you can be guaranteed that they called that press conference when they did to beat Cell C's launch by a couple of days,
which was on Tuesday.
Yeah, I get the impression that the Vodacom thing was a little bit rushed. You know, they haven't switched on the 43 megabit per second network in Johannesburg yet, which, you know, you'd think they would have done before they announced something like this. So it's available in Pretoria and some other parts of the country, but not here in Johannesburg. Hence, I guess, the decision to hold the press conference at Swartkops in Pretoria. And yeah, so, but coverage is coming to Johannesburg by the end of May, they say. And Cell C has, of course, switched on their 42 megabit per second network in Port Elizabeth. They haven't said when they're going to launch Johannesburg yet. But there seems to be a bit of an arms race going on in terms of speed between these two operators right now.
But isn't that the fantastic part of this whole thing, this arms race, that for almost a year since Cell C launched its 21 megabit per second network, HSDPA Plus network, Vodacom and MTN have done nothing really to respond. And suddenly, out of this sort of little advertising spat that's happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, Vodacom has been building this network. I mean,
they've been building the network, but they've been doing it behind the scenes. They've done. Now they're turning it on. They're giving out the access. It's there now.
Yeah,
I think that it's all about a little bit of fire.
They really want to. There is definitely more fire. Their competitive juices are definitely flowing. Vodacom.
But that's great. That's exactly what we want.
And the same is true at Cell C. You know, these two companies don't like each other very much. And it's great for us consumers. Vodacom, Peter Ace did hint that they are going to be broadband price cuts soon. He said that's adding value to consumers, is the way he phrased it, is one part of the three-part rebranding or rejuvenation of the Vodacom brand. I think the others were customer service, and I think the other one was the brand. I forget the detail now, but certainly he said value is the third prong of the strategy that's going to be rolled out over the next few months. So... Yeah, but my guess is that they're not going to cut prices, but they will increase the bundles that you get for your money. If you're on a 5 gig bundle, maybe you'll get 10 gig or something like that, or maybe it won't be that much. But I think that's the sort of thing you're going to see, which is fine. And if you don't need all that bandwidth, then simply switch to a lower package. As far as I'm concerned,
exactly. It's effectively cheaper bandwidth. Yeah. It is effectively dropping prices.
Yes.
Although obviously Vodacom will want you to stay on the package that you're on and then increase the value, which is fair enough. But I think it's great. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen in mobile this year, because we're looking at the likes of Eta and their new BlackBerry package with, granted it's not much, but it's enough, 500 megs of free YouTube or off the 49 rand a month in BlackBerry internet services. I think that's fantastic as well. And new innovative idea that's really latching onto some good trends in market, and that's starting.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Eta. They've announced that they're now going to be selling BlackBerry on their network, and they've just free up, in inverted commas, 500 megabytes a month of YouTube videos, which the other operators, as far as I know, don't offer. It's an interesting competitive move. The telecom annual results are being published in June, and we'll get a better idea of how Eta is doing. I get the impression that they had this huge launch, very expensive launch out at Lanseria Airport, which we live blogged on Tech Central at the time, and there was almost saturation coverage around Eta and advertising everywhere, and it's gone very quiet since then. They spent a lot of money on the launch, and then it kind of fizzled out a bit, I think.
It did, and I wonder why. To what extent is Eta working in the background, and to what extent are they just trying to find their feet? There was less than a month after they launched, or at least a month after they launched, they had a announced this mass of customers that they'd managed to get on board, which was
186,000 people.
An incredible feat.
Yeah, I mean, but we don't know what sort of customers they are.
No, exactly.
I mean, they could have all been prepaid and they could have just switched across to check out the network and gone back to where they were afterwards. They could have also been very low, what are called ARPU customers, yeah, or average revenue per user customers, which the operators don't really want. They want the higher spending customers on their networks. Or they at least want a decent balance of low spending and high spending customers on the network. But we'll get a good indication of their of how ATIS performed at the June results.
This particular offering probably won't be included in that. No, I think they'll need some time to gain traction with this. But I am keen to see how the iPad data services worked out for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that they'll provide full details on exactly how much they've sold through that channel.
Yeah, I don't think there are that many. Maybe there may be a few thousand iPads in the market, so I can't see it being a big revenue spinner for them.
No, too true. But we'll see how it goes. I'm just keen to see how it's doing as a business. I think that this product is a very good product, an innovative product, and I know that they've been working on it for quite some time. So
I think half of ATIS' problem is that as they were launching, Celsius was coming into the market with their new brand and spending hundreds of millions of rand on advertising, and they kind of got drowned out.
They did kind of. It's a pity.
And I think Lars Reichelt at Celsius knows that ATIS is a threat, and they just excuse the phrase, went balls to the wall with their ad campaign and their relaunch and all the rest of it, and they kind of. It really was. There were two effectively new brands coming into the market. I mean, Celsius had been around for 10 years, but it was effectively a new brand coming into the market. Yeah. And you had ATIS coming into the market. So it was really, in many respects, less a battle between Celsius and, in the early stages at least, but initially a battle between Celsius and MTN and Vodacom, and perhaps more of a battle between Celsius and ATIS for mindshare. But yeah, we'll know in a couple of months how ATIS is doing and whether they're managing to gain traction in the market. I was interested in that fact that the new BlackBerry bundles include free unlimited phone calls to a telecom number of your choosing.
Well, they do that on almost all their packages.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's a real. Because you often, people often phone one particular number.
Yeah.
And you could save a lot of money that way.
Well, their launch offer also had the first 1 million customers could choose, I think, between one and three. I can't remember exactly.
Oh, that's right.
Telecom numbers that they could phone.
That's still going
for free. Yes, it is.
Okay, that means they haven't reached the 1 million customer market.
Well, at least it's still listed on their website as of this morning.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Probably pretty much means they haven't reached 1 million customers yet.
No, I don't think that's
good. But they're targeting 15% market share, which is very aggressive.
It is aggressive.
If you think it's LC's got 10%, or maybe it's moved up slightly to 11 or 12% by now.
We'll have to see when we see. I'm sure Celsius will release results at some point in the near future.
Yeah, they don't publish their results in detail, but they do tend to provide their subscriber numbers. And the last figure I saw was 8 million.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we need to take a quick break there, Candice. We'll be back right after these messages.
The Vox Superphone and your ADSL line go together like taxis and rush hour.
Ah!
But we do give a hoot. Now you can use your ADSL for more than just surfing. With the Superphone, you can call any phone, anywhere, using your ADSL line. You save money, earn rebates, and box-to-box calls are free. No contracts, just plug and play. Your ADSL and the Vox Superphone. It's the perfect combination. Make the most of your ADSL. Visit voxsuperphone.co.za.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon.
Ignition sequence start.
It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN. Lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod, and I'm here with Candace Jones. I think I forgot to introduce us at the beginning of the show, actually.
No, I don't think you did.
Didn't I? Oh, okay, we'll have to take a listen again.
Late night again last night.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't sleep last night, so it's my brain is on... running in first gear today. I guess it's all telecom show this week. I want to chat a little bit about this wax cable, which has finally landed in just north of Cape Town at Azefontein. I was amazed at the saturation coverage it got in the popular media. It was on the front page of the Star, and apparently in the front page of the Argus down in Cape Town. The popular media really latched onto it for some reason. But
I think maybe it's because of the way Seacom managed to change the African market in terms of internet access.
Seacom certainly never got the sort of coverage.
It didn't, and I think they feel like they missed out on the Seacom coverage, and the wax cable could be as important and could drive prices as much as Seacom did, although again, not immediately. But I think it's exciting news, and the more the populace knows about it, the better.
Yeah, the question, I mean, I've been on a number of TV shows and radio stations in the last couple of days talking about wax. And the question all the interviewers are asking me is, you know, is there going to be a massive drop in broadband prices, and when is it going to happen? And there seems to be a sort of general disappointment. I say, well, the cable's only going live in the first quarter of 2012. They have to go through provisioning and testing, et cetera, et cetera. But in the long term, probably from sometime next year, we are going to start to see this flowing through. And depending on who you talk to, some operators say there'll be a small reduction in the cost of international bandwidth. Others say that, I think Rudy Janssen from MWeb said that he expects the wax cable to be just as revolutionary in terms of pricing as Seacom was. So I guess we'll have to wait to see, but certainly it's an open access cable system, and all the investors in it can sell capacity to anybody. So there's going to be serious competition on this cable, and I can't imagine it not having an impact on international bandwidth prices.
There were so many opinions around whether Seacom would do the same thing for broadband in South Africa or Africa as a continent. And when Kenya started plummeting and South Africa stayed the same, there was a lot of speculation about whether it would actually change anything in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And then it did, and it was quite sudden. You know, all of a sudden, you know, prices dropped, ADSL lines came down, there was suddenly uncapped broadband, and all off the back of the fact that there's cheaper international capacity. Mm. And the more competition in that space, the better. You will see prices decline. Mm. I don't believe, and this is a personal opinion, I don't believe that there will be as dramatic a drop Seacom came in. But I do believe that it will be competitive.
I think in part because of the fact that there isn't enough competition in national backhaul yet.
Yes, I think that's exactly where the problem is. But that's also changing.
Yeah.
And that's changing quite rapidly and with a lot of national capacity coming in. How much of it is going to be leasable remains to be seen.
Yeah. And of course, there's also the challenge of the IP Connect charges that Telkom charges to internet service providers for access to the local loop.
Unbundling.
If you talk to the ISPs, they just say the prices can't really come down much further until there's something done about that Telkom IPC charge.
Well, they're estimating that 50% of all broadband costs to the consumer is Telkom's charges.
That's come down from where it used to be.
That's a good start.
But, you know, there's so much investment. I had a great chat this morning with the CEO of Fiberco. And we were talking about national fiber rollout, and there's so much investment happening.
Mm.
But it's going to take time. These networks take time. They're in the first leg of their network, which is basically going to connect the three big cities, is only going to go live towards the end of next year. And it's going to take a couple of years beyond that before they've got the full 12 to 14,000 kilometer network that they're planning to roll out available. But, you know, the more investment happens, the more prices will come down. So we're getting there. The last challenge is obviously going to be the last mile. And there, I think it's going to be a combination of people using legacy copper on a DSL and a wireless broadband through the mobiles mainly, and potentially down the line, fiber to the home through a company like i3 Africa. But that's probably the most long-term of the scenarios.
Mm-hmm. I think the most short-term of the scenarios is the access to the copper that's there already. Hopefully with the local loop unbundling regulation and the facilities leasing regulations is being tested now. Hopefully that test will prove whether or not local loop unbundling will be feasible by 1 November.
Mm.
Again, I'm not even sure that local loop unbundling will help in that respect, but I think that wireless broadband at the moment is our best option.
Yeah, But that's expensive if you're a heavy bandwidth user. You can't really run your business on a wireless broadband
network. No, unfortunately not.
And I don't see that coming down because there is a, you know, there are limitations in terms of spectrum, so the operators can't really offer you uncapped mobile broadband.
No, they can't.
Well, I think there is scope, I think, for prices to come down in that space.
Look, I think they are coming down, and I
definitely.
And I, you know, what's fantastic again about this advertising spat between Vodacom and Cell C is that it's pushing prices as well. I mean, Vodacom's now launched its 149 rand 2 gig plus 2 gig package, which is fantastic. I mean, that's competing directly with Cell C's actual broadband packages as well. So that's great. I mean, that's driving competition. That's lovely. But you're right. You can't run a business on a wireless package at the moment.
Yeah.
But WAX, exciting stuff. I think it's going to change the way we do business again.
And there are more coming. I mean, we've got WAX. Well, WAX has landed, but it's not live yet. But next year, ACE is landing. ACE, Africa Coast to Europe, is a France Telecom backed project to run a similar high capacity cable system along the same route. And then, of course, further down the line, we've got the E5 Telecoms and this SAX, the South Atlantic Express project, that's still in the planning phases, but that's going to produce the highest capacity cable to date, 12.8 terabits per second of capacity, linking Brazil with Angola and South Africa.
Now, you were told some really interesting stats the other day about the first SAT-1 cable.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I was chatting to Johan Meyer, who's the executive at Telkom in charge of international connectivity, and he said that when SAT-1 launched in 1968, it was a coaxial copper cable under the ocean. Must have cost an absolute fortune in today's currency terms. And it could carry, I think the figure was 350 or 370 telephone channels. So you could have a maximum of around 350 people making a telephone call to Europe.
At the same time.
At the same time. The WAX cable, using uncompressed voice, is capable of carrying 60 million simultaneous telephone calls. That means every single person in South Africa can make a telephone call to every single person in the UK, and there'd still be capacity left on the cable, all making that call at the same time without compression. Now, if you add compression into the picture, you can make 500 million simultaneous phone calls. But I think what that proves is that these cables are being built not for telephone conversations but for internet and broadband
data.
Data is pushing all the traffic.
I mean, that's where it's at. So convergence, we're going to see more data, voice over data traffic. Lots is going to change in the next couple. I mean, video is becoming big as well, and that's, you know, that needs quite a lot of capacity. So it's great.
Yeah. Cool. Candice, before we sign off for this week, we don't often talk about international companies, but I was really interested in some of the news that was coming out of Apple this week, most notably this scandal around the iOS 4 software that runs on the iPhone and the iPad, and the fact that security researchers have uncovered what they believe is Apple surreptitiously recording people's movements. You know, as they move around, they've found that there's a file on iOS 4 devices that records all this data. Now, there's no evidence that this information has been passed back to Apple, but it's completely undocumented in Apple's developer documents, etc. It's a bit of a worrying development in my view. I know you think it's a bit of a storm in a teacup, but
I do.
Frankly, is enough for me not to purchase one of these devices.
I think it's a little bit paranoid since you're in control of that file. I mean, it's on your. There's no evidence that it's being passed back to Apple at all.
But that possibility exists.
I suppose it does, and until that, okay, if it's uncovered that it is being passed back to Apple, that they are tracking my movement from base station to base station and what time I'm there and what Wi-Fi network I'm on, then fine.
But why would they put it there in the first place and not tell people about it?
I think it's for location-based services. I think it's for location-based applications that tell you, okay, I'm here, this is my base station, this is where I'm at. So fair enough. I mean, I could also, a lot of the stuff that Google uses does the same thing. It also tracks where you are and which Wi-Fi network. Yes, but
you have the right to switch that off. It tells you what it's going to do, and you can actually say no thank you when you install the software.
Fair enough. I think that it's that they should have at some point mentioned it in the hardware specifications or the software information. But at the same time, I also don't think it's a big deal. I mean, you control that information, and you know, you can stop people from accessing that information outside of you on your phone. So I really think it's a bit of a storm in a teacup, to be honest. I mean, I was just thinking about Google's big wireless access issue that there were harvesting Wi-Fi information, people's homes and stuff. And I think that's a far bigger deal.
Yeah. I think these companies do need to be a lot more cautious of it, but I think they're a little gung-ho around these privacy issues sometimes. And I think this is a serious issue. I saw CNN was leading with it this morning. so it's certainly getting the coverage out there, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sort of investigation into this particular issue by regulators in the US.
Look, if it turns up information that says that Apple actually has access to this file, then fair enough. Mm. Then I think that they've crossed the line. But I mean, if it's sitting on my iPhone, not doing anything just other than collecting log information, that's fine. I mean, I do that with half my other applications on half my other phones as well.
But I think the point is Apple should have told you that it's doing this and allowed you to opt out of it.
I suppose. I mean, if you want location-based information, do you really need to know that that's how it's getting it?
I think you have the right to know that if your phone is collecting data about you. Because, I mean, what if you lose, someone steals your phone? They can then extract this file relatively easily, because apparently it's not particularly encrypted.
No, it is actually quite easy to. And it's not encrypted at all.
Not encrypted at all. There we go. So if your phone is stolen, your phone can be stolen. I mean, there are security issues around this. I mean, imagine if you're the president of the United States, for example, and your iPhone 4 gets stolen by a terrorist who can then take that information, look at it, and determine exactly the sort of routes and movements
that you take. That enough. I mean, I see that as being an issue, but there are other security features on your phone. You know, that you, after three entries, the wrong entries of your password, your phone can get wiped, and that information gets wiped with it. So, you know, I suppose there are some security issues around it, but I still don't think that it's worth the blowout that it's been made of.
I think it's a story that's going to run there. So
it will be interesting to see what comes out of it, though.
Just lastly on Apple, I see they put out their quarterly earnings yesterday, and their quarterly profit was up 90 something. I think it was 95% to $6 billion. $6 billion of profit in 3 months, and their share price has leapt up again. I see, and it's just as we're recording the show, it's just pre-market trade. The share price is up over 5%. And close to an all-time high. And I see an analyst firm in the US put out a research report yesterday, I think, or just after the announcement of the quarterly earnings, giving them a price target of $550 a share. They're currently at around $335, $340 a share, which would put their market valuation over $500 billion.
Well, we were talking about the dot-com bubble the other day, Duncan.
We were, yes.
Doesn't it look like it's heading in that direction again?
well, actually not, because if you look at Apple's price to earnings multiple and all the other metrics that analysts look at, it's not excessive at all. It's actually based on, you know, if Apple can deliver 20% earnings growth for the next 3 years, these valuations actually make sense, which is the most amazing thing.
Well, that's the wonderful thing. I think we might see a bubble in the social networking side of things.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, those companies, I mean, Twitter valuation, what is the valuation on Twitter? Something like $30 billion, and it has never made a cent of profit. And has no idea how it's going to make money.
We'll see how that goes. But kudos to Apple. I mean, they've done great work over the last couple of months. And
Yeah. We were actually chatting about the dot-com bubble yesterday, and talking about some of the magazines that were around in that day, like Red Herring and Business 2.0. And there were a couple of in the Industry Standard. And I remember reading these things avidly at the time. And, you know, they had some of these issues. Some of these magazines were over 1,000 pages thick. You'd have to flip 50 pages, 60 pages before you even got to the contents page of ads with pets.com and petfood.com and every site under the sun burning through their venture capital on these magazines. And then it all fell through the floor. It reminded me of a company called Ariba, which was one of the hot business-to-business e-commerce sites at the time. And it's if you look at their stock chart on Google Finance, it's ARBA, and you can really see the story of the dot-com bubble. Just take it back to its listing on the chart. And at its peak in 2000, the company was worth $95 billion.
Well, it listed, and it shot up to $1,000.
It shot up to $1,000, and now it's something like $30. it was a manic time. But it's hard to think that was 11 years ago now when that bubble burst. All right, Candice, on that note, I think we need to wrap it up there. Have a great Easter weekend, everyone, and we'll see you at the same time next week. Cheers.